coming up on KUCB News, the Unalaska City Council voted not to increase local utility rates. And the CDC has new guidance on face coverings. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Maggie Nelson with some local news on Wednesday, April 28, 2021. The Unalaska City Council voted down a proposal Monday that would have raised utility rates. The council voted 2-3 to reject the increase, which would have hiked electricity prices by about 6% and water rates by more than 3%. But the biggest increases would have been 40% for wastewater and trash rates by a third. Those two would have taken place over a four-year period. Unalaska City Councilman David Gregory was among the majority that rejected it. He says industrial users rather than resident customers should pay more.
Rather than putting the burden on our residential customers, I would think that the cost causer should be the cost payer.
Director of Public Utilities Dan Winters says residents are currently paying about $2.50 per 1,000 gallons for wastewater, while industrial customers are paying only $1.13 per 1,000 gallons. Part of the reason for that, he says, is they treat their own wastewater, which doesn't pass through the city's water treatment plant. Industrial wastewater rates are also estimated and based on the amount of water they use, which, Winter says, is about 6 million gallons per month. But, he says, it's true that the residential users are bearing the brunt of wastewater utility use.
The residential and commercial has been burdened with that for some time, but we've kept that in the way it is as far as the rates go because we actually sell more water that way, which keeps our rates lower.
Winter suggests implementing an even increase for all customers, from unmetered residential users to metered industry customers. One option Winters presented would increase rates for industrial users, like fish processors, at a higher rate. Council members Sherry Coleman and Bong Tungle both voted against an amendment that would increase industrial rates more than residential and commercial, and they were the only two members to vote for increased utility rates across the board. Coleman says industrial wastewater isn't metered, so she's not comfortable with charging more.
Unless they're really metered, you don't really know. So there's some speculations and assumptions made. I just really don't want to put that burden on that group with a certain amount of unknown.
If the city does increase industrial wastewater rates, some plants could disconnect from city water, which the public utilities director says could increase costs for all. Ultimately, the resolution failed on a 2-3 vote. It will be revised and brought back to council at a special meeting next month. In other business, the City of Unalaska granted more than $1.3 million to 9 local organizations through its community support program. While the coronavirus pandemic is ramping down, the effects of an entire year of social distancing and avoiding public spaces has taken a major toll on Unalaska's community organizations, many of which look to the city to provide aid. Danine Luby, part owner of the Norwegian Rat Saloon, spoke at the council's special meeting Monday in support of Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, or USAFE. She says the nonprofit has stepped up to help locals throughout the year, and that extra work should be recognized.
They have done an awesome job at reaching out to community members, especially when the bar got shut down. They reached out to us to help our bartenders and our cooks and everybody. They're very proactive in helping everybody in the community, for no matter what kind of needs they are.
That $1.3 million is less than a 3% increase from last year's funding, despite almost a 10% increase in the amount requested. The total number of local agencies asking for city funding this year was also down by 1, and there were no nonprofit capital grant requests. Still, local organization requests totaled more than $145,000 over the city's targeted available funds. Several organizations requested amounts similar to last year's requests, and council members unanimously granted full funding to many of those, such as the Unalaska Visitors Bureau, USAFE, and the Island Senior Center. But in order to reach their targeted spending amount, council members had to make cuts somewhere. Those cuts came down to three organizations: the Cowalungan Tribes Culture Camp, its food bank, and the Aluluk Family and Health Services Clinic. The IFHS clinic requested $180,000. Part of that request was to help maintain staffing for after-hours emergencies. As the island has no hospital, the clinic provides one of the only options in emergency situations. Councilman David Gregory spoke in support of the clinic at the meeting.
Health for our community is just so important. So I think we need to make sure that they get the money that they need in order to run this after hours, the emergency program.
After much deliberation, the council voted to grant the clinic about $150,000. Here's council member Sherry Coleman.
I actually do kind of find it, I wouldn't say disturbing, but a little ironic that we're in a state of emergency and we're cutting the clinic grant amount.
Most members were reluctant to make cuts to the clinic. Several noted that it has already received notable funding, but suggested the city should continue to look for other ways to provide support. Ultimately, council members voted to fund the tribe's culture camp at $39,000, just under half of its requested amount. They cited concerns that the camp may be canceled this year, and if the funds are not used, other organizations would then be missing out on that money. They granted the tribe's food bank almost half of its requested amount. The city council meets again Monday, May 10th, for a special meeting to continue discussing utility rate increases. If you're fully vaccinated against the coronavirus, you no longer need to wear a face mask outside, unless you're in a big crowd. That's according to new advice Tuesday from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Bob Aunders at the Alaska Native Medical Center says he supports the relaxed guidance.
I think it is another significant step towards normalcy.
Research shows that the risk of transmitting the coronavirus in most outdoor settings is extremely low. It's so low that the CDC now says even unvaccinated people don't have to wear a mask if they're walking, running, or biking outside alone, or with someone they live with. But Anders says it's also important to note that the CDC is still recommending that everyone wear face masks at crowded outdoor events like parades and concerts. The new CDC guidance comes as about half of Alaskans ages 16 and older have gotten at least their first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Anders says he hopes more Alaskans sign up to get their shots as they learn more about the benefits of vaccination. Last week, the National Marine Fisheries Service published a final rule designating critical habitat for three populations of humpback whales, including some areas in Alaska. The federal ruling affects the eastern Aleutians, Kodiak, Prince William Sound, as well as the coastlines of Washington, Oregon, and California. As KFSK's Angela Denning reports, the ruling excludes Bristol Bay and Southeast Alaska.
The rule establishes about 116,000 square nautical miles of protected area for the endangered Western North Pacific and Central American populations of humpback whales and the threatened Mexico population. These whales winter in warm southern waters, but travel north for seasonal feeding on krill, herring, and other small species. In Alaska, critical habitat has been identified near the eastern Aleutian Islands, Kodiak, and Prince William Sound areas. The Endangered Species Act mandates that the federal government create critical habitat for endangered species. Lisa Manning with the National Marine Fisheries Service says the 238-page ruling came after careful consideration of public comments.
The goal is to identify everything the species really needs to get to recovery.
Some areas in Alaska were excluded in the designation, like Bristol Bay and Southeast, because the federal agency determined the economic impacts and national security of those areas outweigh the potential protection of the whales. Manning says NIMFS decided to exclude Southeast because it's considered one of the least important areas for conservation of these whale groups.
Out of all the other areas considered, it is the one they're using the least. Most of the whales there are from the non-listed Hawaii population.
Dozens of Southeast fishermen from different gear groups spoke out against the designation in a public hearing in Petersburg last January. Amy Daugherty was one of them. She's the executive director of the Alaska Trollers Association.
We were a little bit concerned about having some lines drawn over our grounds that could potentially impact us. So we're glad that the agency is bypassing Southeast Alaska.
Other fishing groups said they are still reviewing the recent ruling, as is Alaska's Commissioner of Fish and Game, Doug Vincent Lang. The main threat identified for the whales were ship strikes and fishing gear entanglements. Specifically, pots and traps that have vertical lines, such as for black cod fishing or crabbing. The habitat designation could only affect federal commercial fisheries and not state-managed ones. The ruling could also impact federal activities like Coast Guard operations, oil spill response, seismic surveys, and permitting for Army Corps in-water construction. The Center for Biological Diversity believes this will be enough to help protect the whales. Catherine Kilduff is an attorney with the center.
We're excited. This was a huge win for humpback whales.
The center was one of three environmental groups that sued the federal government to force the designation required by law. Kilduff says now the whales' prey species can be protected, and hopefully the whales can be delisted in the future, like the Hawaii population was.
Animals with critical habitat designated are twice as likely to be recovering as those without. So we know that having these areas drawn on a map increases awareness about where the animals are and what kind of protections they need.
The National Marine Fisheries Service began considering the critical habitat ruling in the spring of 2018, but things became delayed with a government shutdown and then the pandemic. The rule goes into effect May 21st, 30 days after its publication. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
April is National Poetry Month. Stay tuned after the newscast and throughout the day to hear Unalaskans reading some of their favorite poems. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Maggie Nelson, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.